The next case is 96-526 in the matter of Richard Hayes, an alleged neglected and offended child.
Case in re young children as affecting your argument.
The young case on the strictly legal issue was addressing different statutory, it was addressing the sunset provisions, which are not an issue. But at the beginning of the reasoning for the young case, this court makes very clear that the purpose of 2151 is to protect the best interest of children, and the legislature left little doubt about that being the intent of the statute. And then when you look at things by analogy, in this case, a six-month provision or a dispositional requirement in Young with the sunset provisions, you don't interpret those so strictly or so literally as to deprive the trial court of the ability to protect the interests of a child who needs to be protected, and according to Chapter 2151, is to be protected. The sole purpose behind 2151 is to provide permanent, stable homes where the interests of the children are to be protected. In Young, this court says, don't interpret the sunset provision so absolutely as to deprive the court of that ability. What I'm asking this court to do in this case is to not interpret so narrowly 2151-413 and, according to the Court of Appeals, 414, as to deprive Hancock County Juvenile Court or other juvenile courts in the state of Ohio to protect a child's interest in a clearly bad home life.
How do you liberally interpret 413 when it specifically says there has to be a time period in which temporary custody is there before you can have a final order or at least an application for permanent custody?
Well, on two grounds. First of all, 413 says that an agency that has been granted temporary custody, once 6 months has expired, may then request permanent custody. 413 never says an agency that has been granted temporary custody and still has it may request. What 413 makes clear in the Coffey decision, which I cite you to from the 5th District in 1991, is that the grant of temporary custody is a point in time which is complete when generalized.
Okay, let me concede that for purposes of argument. Is that what happened here? What happened here, temporary custody was granted, then you returned the child. Are you not equating the words protective supervision with temporary custody, and aren't they in fact different?
Exactly. They are statutorily different.
Sure they are.
So Coffey had the identical facts. They had temporary custody, and the child was then returned to the home under protective supervision. What Coffey says, though, is that point in time analysis, that the juvenile court had granted temporary custody to the agency. They then modify this position, which they have the inherent authority to do. But that initial grant is what starts that six-month clock running. Then at the end of that six-month clock, or that six-month timeline, if you meet or can prove the other elements of a permanent custody case, you then have fulfilled the requirements of 413.
Temporary custody, those two words are words of art, are they not?
They're very clearly statutory.
Okay. If they are words of art, they're statutorily defined, when you don't have what you and I know to be temporary custody, because you've already returned the child back to the parent under a order called protective supervision, how can you say the temporary custody continues when you don't have it?
It doesn't continue, but you don't have to have current temporary custody under 413. Because Coffey and Burkhardt make very clear that the grant is the key time. Now, what the Third District does, which causes confusion, is rely on Miller decisions in 1995, which says 413 and 414 mean the same thing. 414 says a public children's services agency or a private children's services agency that has temporary custody.
Yeah, let's stay with the statute. What happens next then, supposing cases that I've represented, you finally show that the reunification plan is working, the court terminates temporary custody, sends the child back, but you still have protective supervision over the child. Then you come in and say, okay, now I want permanent custody. Do you go back to the order, which in fact was vacated?
You never go back to the order.
But that's what you're saying. We go back to the point in time when temporary custody was originally granted. And anything that happens in the intervening time is not important for the six-month period.
That's what Coffey says, exactly.
Well, but that's what you're saying.
Exactly.
Okay, now how does that square with the statute that says you must have 6 months has elapsed since the order of temporary custody was? I agree with you, 6 months has elapsed since the initial order of custody. But that order has been terminated. I mean, that's like us keeping journal entries open. We enter a judgment in a case, but we say 3 years from now, well, we really go back to the date that the lawsuit was filed.
Well, if the juvenile court had terminated the case that the temporary custody was ordered or was made out of,
yeah,
and then you try to go back,
yeah,
certainly that would be inconsistent.
Well, doesn't it terminate de jure, if de facto, if not de jure, by returning the child to the parent with protective custody?
No.
Okay.
The case remained open under the original adjudication of dependency. And all we have then was what the statute provides for, dispositional changes. Every time disposition changed, there was a new case fighting for new requirements. When the child was returned in May of 94 under protective supervision, temporary custody terminated, but you don't go back and undo the grant. That journal entry from November of 93 is still part of the record. It's still valid. It's just not the current disposition.
The entry that granted the protective supervision, I don't know if you're familiar with it enough to know, does it say any such thing as temporary custody is hereby vacated? Does it refer to making that a void?
It doesn't void the temporary custody order. It says temporary custody, I'm not sure if it's ended or is terminated, and the child is returned.
Mm-hmm.
Coffey says that doesn't happen. Because unlike 414, 413 doesn't talk about an agency that has temporary custody. 413 talks about an agency that has been granted temporary custody, and then 6 months has lapsed. Burkhardt, which is the 12th district decision, says the same thing. In Burkhardt, they didn't amend to protective supervision, they amended the law for foster care, but factually, it's an irrelevant difference because what the Third District says is that you must have current temporary custody. And as this court has pointed out, protective supervision, temporary custody, and long-term foster care now are all very clearly statutorily defined. So if you have long-term foster care, by definition, you do not have temporary custody. Burkhardt says it doesn't matter. You don't have to go back to temporary custody to request permanent custody.
So let me ask, what does the agency have when it has emergency protective custody? It's not temporary, because that's different than temporary custody, right?
Correct.
That's what it took in November after it didn't work out to have the mother have the child in protective custody. Then the agency took this emergency protective custody.
Correct.
Just before the application for permanent custody, is that correct?
That's correct.
So you cannot say, I guess, that we had the agency had the equivalent of temporary custody, albeit not for a new six-month period, but didn't have the equivalent of temporary custody when it applied for permanent custody.
If interpreting 413, the requirement is a disposition of temporary custody, no, we did not have that. Because emergency temporary custody is just merely an interim order where the court finds probable cause to believe there's been new and neglected abuse.
It gets the child out of the house, I assume, and back into the custody
right,
of the...
It's purely a protection issue.
Yeah.
What Burkhart and Coffey make very clear is that it doesn't make sense to do what the third district is telling us to do. Why on earth would you go temporary custody, modify that disposition to something else, whether it's protective supervision or long-term foster care, not temporary custody, and then go back to temporary custody when you know it didn't work the first time? Coffey says that's not required. Burkhart says, quote, it's unduly repetitious to do that. What the third district is asking the courts to do is to repeat themselves over and over again and giving the mother more and more chances that she's already had.
Is there any limit here, in your view, to this gap that could occur between the first order of temporary custody, it's for 6 months, and then there's a 2-year gap between that order and now the agency files a motion for permanent custody. And we don't know say whatever you want, what happens in the middle. Is there any, how long could this gap be between the original order?
Well, as you approach the 2-year time frame, you're going to get into interpretations of sunset provisions. If you follow your court's decision in Young, that the sunsets are directory and not in every case absolute, it could theoretically go up to 2 years. But I certainly don't want to give this court the impression that I'm advocating once that 6-month clock is up, boom, we get temporary custody. There are many other requirements, best interest, reasonable efforts.
Well, that's it. It's just an ability to move.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm.
The permanent issue is whether or not it was proper for us to request it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the third district doesn't address the other two assignments of error, which are factual questions on best interest and reasonable efforts, because they say it was improper for us to file it. What the third district does is ignore the language differences between 413 and 414, because they are very different languages. And if the legislature is meant to mean the same thing, they would use the same language. Additionally, the third district, its sole basis for the decision is the Miller case out of the second district. They never even talk about Coffey or Burkhart. There's no mention of them, no even passing references to them. Yet they come to this, what they call an inescapable conclusion that 413 and 414 mean the same thing.
Well, let me, under 41.4, that's the statute under which the agency asked for permanent custody, isn't that correct?
The motion was filed pursuant to 413, which then directs you, for purposes of how the hearing is to be conducted, to 414.
Yeah, it says that the agency has temporary custody, but your agency didn't have it then, did they?
Well,
they had this emergency custody, I thought.
We had been granted temporary custody at one time,
so
we did not have it currently.
You're relating that back to, okay, you're relating even that one back to...
Yes, but see, the language of 414 isn't even clear that it requires a public children's services agency such as the appellant to have temporary custody, because it's not punctuated. What it says is that a public children's services agency or a private children's services agency with temporary custody. Well, what does that mean? The third district says it's inescapable that it modifies 413. It means everybody has to have temporary custody. Well, that's certainly not clear from the language, and there's no statutory authority to support that. Miller says it's a true statement, that it's inescapable, but Miller doesn't address Coffey or Burkhart either.
Let's forget about Miller and Burkhart and all those court appeals cases. Why doesn't the language simply say that the agency, under 414, leave out the question of whether you can come back in the 6-month period? Why doesn't it just clearly say that the agency that has temporary custody of the child, you really didn't technically have temporary custody of the child when you applied for permanent custody. It would have been easy to do that, it seems to me, wouldn't it?
Well, what we would have had to ask the juvenile court to do is we would have had to request a temporary custody.
Right.
With the understanding then that the only reason we were doing it was to get the permanent custody.
To satisfy the statutory language.
Correct.
Yeah.
And then ask the juvenile court to say that was in the best interest of the child. But I don't know that would have...
Seems a little cumbersome, but sometimes statutes are cumbersome. And the plain language is that has temporary custody, which seems to me to say today when you file the application, the motion for permanent custody, you have temporary custody.
With the court, I see that I'm ending my rebuttal time, so I can take just a moment to address that question.
Sure.
The 413 doesn't say that.
No, it doesn't, but
exactly.
But 414 does, and that's my problem.
It wasn't filed under 414. And Burkhart says 414, the fact that you follow those procedures, does not mean you take on all of the requirements finally, under 4.1. Burkhart says to go back is unduly repetitious. Coffey says it is not a jurisdictional requirement. And all that we're asking the court to do then is look at the Third District of Kane and say they don't talk about any of that. Up until the late 1995, this was a settled issue. And then all of a sudden, Miller comes out of nowhere, and the Third District follows it without any basis for doing so. Unless there's questions, that's the third question.
Okay. Thank you, Mr. Stern.
Thank you.
Mr. Pilkins.
Thank you, Your Honor. Good morning. My name is John Pilkins, and I represent the appellee, Michelle Hayes Parks, who is the mother of the minor child in this particular case. I would like to address first, from a factual and legal standpoint, the question that was asked, what was it that the juvenile court did as far as terminating the temporary custody which it had? I attached that originally for the appeals court as Appendix G, and that particular entry was filed May 9, 1994. That particular entry specified that the court, upon hearing sworn testimony and evidence presented, orders that the custody of said child shall be returned to the mother, Rochelle Hayes, on or before May 16, 1994. It further states, it is further ordered that the case plan in this matter be amended from temporary custody to protective supervision. So that is how we initially got from a temporary custody with the agency.
But do you agree that the court continued to retain jurisdiction over that case under the same case number as it monitored this return of custody under protective basis?
Yes, I would agree that they did continue to have that kind of jurisdiction.
And at any point that temporary or that return of custody was failing, they could have, again, under the same case name, moved to do something different, such as perhaps move the child to permanent custody.
Yes and no. They could, under the guidelines of 21.413 and 414, which is what the motion was brought for in this particular case, or they could consider a new complaint filed listing new allegations of dependency and neglect. So it really is the court two different alternatives. The court could proceed under section 413 or 414 in that case number.
But in either case, they had not terminated their own supervision. They obviously were concerned about putting this child back in. They wanted this child to sort of a test case with the mother. And they obviously concluded whether the evidence supports it or not is not ruled on by the Court of Appeals. But the trial court obviously concluded that there was a total failure of that to return the custody to the mother.
And thus, they issued their order granting the motion.
Mr. Pilkins, what is the strongest policy argument that you could make in support of your view of how we should apply the statute here?
Certainly, Your Honor. Pursuant to three code sections, 2151.413, 414, and 415F, each of those relate themselves to the following proposition. Where a parent has been unable, after 6 months of reasonable effort, to rectify the problem, a motion for permanent custody can and could be filed. So if there is a policy to be set forward, it's to the understanding that the reason the 6 month mandate is put into the statute is to allow for parents to rectify the problems that have been brought to their attention. And that's why it is our position that it is not 6 months from any grant of temporary custody, not 2 years before this.
Well, but doesn't this case just show the problem with that here this child's mother had great difficulties, and they went back in the house and found the child had been apparently abused, physically abused, and other problems? I mean, how? I guess wouldn't the policy be that the agency ought to be able to move as quickly as possible with deference to the sections of the code that you stated, but it seems to me that happened here, and now the question is, the mother here has been given a good bit of time to be a good mother and to not come up against the statute. So So why wouldn't the policy of the law be that this should finally be decided, this issue of permanent custody or not? I mean, I can understand what you're saying, except it seems here that that's all happened. It's all occurred. I mean, she's had all this time and still is failing.
I think that the legislature has answered that question because they give the Department of Human Services two alternatives. They can either proceed under the present existing case, wait the 6 months period of time where there's temporary custody, and then file for permanent custody. Or the alternative, what they can do, and this is actually addressed in Ray Miller, they give an alternative of filing a new complaint pursuant to Juvenile Rule 10A and Section 2151.27A, listing the new allegations of abuse, neglect, or dependency. So if you want to act more quickly, you can file a new complaint rather than going back to the old case number and that old case that had listed.
But even under the new complaint, they would still have to wait then 6 months. Whether they filed with the old or from your theory, or when they filed new, your theory is they still have to wait 6 months, make these efforts to reunite the child, et cetera, et cetera. So I don't understand how it would be faster to file a new complaint.
Because under the previous case, the child was placed in protective supervision, and that before they would be able to file a motion for permanent custody, they would have to at least 6 months worth of temporary custody. With bringing new applications, they could ask for temporary custody immediately rather than file a motion and a request first be granted temporary custody. Under Section 2151.27A, they could ask for temporary custody immediately. I agree with the court. There is a concern of what is occurring with the child during that 6 month period.
That's the problem, is that we have this balance between the right of the parent to rehabilitate himself or herself, a reasonable time to do that, and the right of the child, if it's a right, at least the interest certainly of the state in having this limbo that the child is in confined to as short a period as it can possibly be confined. And your suggestion of application statute would add another 6 months that may be appropriate in some instances, but in others it may not be. It may be that this child needs the permanent commitment so that the adoption process can begin.
That's understood. The difficulty, though, in formulating a proposition is that the court has to give that parent some opportunity to present what they've done right. In the present case, there was a period of essentially 3 days for this parent to show what they've been able to do to rectify the circumstances. A further fact that's important to note is once filed its motion for the permanent custody, they ceased all efforts to try to reunite this child with the mother.
Yeah, well, I think you made that point. I think they, at some point the agency gives up, don't they? I mean, they have a whole big caseload, and they work with parents who they think are conducive to being helped. And here, as I took at least from what I read from the briefs, you may argue it, but it looks here as if they have tried, and they've decided this mother is not a fit mother, and so we have to do something for the child. I think that seems to be the issue that that seems to be the facts, whether they're disputed or not, maybe.
And whether or not the legislature has taken that into consideration in establishing that 6 month period, I can only again point the court back to those three code sections that actually make reference to that requirement that the mother, in this particular case, the mother be given that opportunity to seek reunification. Those same standards were reviewed in the case of the Raymond. And I want to indicate to the court and point out one thing with regards to the case authority of Henry Coffey. The appellant wants to point the court to the question presented for review in that particular case was whether a children's services agency must have temporary custody of a child when it files a close dispositional motion for permanent custody of that child. Same question that's being asked here today. Coffey answered it, yes. That's exactly how they answered it. They must have temporary custody. That is what I am discussing with this court to do, is affirm the decision to Coffey, affirm the decision in Ray Miller, that
But why endanger the child for these technical delays? It was demonstrated that this woman couldn't do it. Why have to go back 6 months and go all over again? That seems ridiculous. Well, who are we protecting here? The mother? It seems like we're protecting the mother, hoping that custody isn't turned over permanently. We're here to protect the child, aren't we?
And I think that's why the legislature gives us basically 5 different alternatives when requesting where the child will be placed during the pendency of the time. Temporary custody means that the child is going to be placed outside of the home.
How much more evidence does the agency need? It seems like that they had plenty of evidence that, what, in 3 days it developed, that this couldn't be done. Why have to go through a superficial 6 month period again to try and prove again that the mother, well, this was just sort of something that only happened once and it won't happen again. Let's give her another chance. This doesn't make any sense to me.
The way in which I will answer your question is to indicate that this is the statute requires. Albeit it might be an unfortunate circumstance to say, let's try to reunite the mother and child. The statute requires that. And if the statute requires that, then it's beyond the approach to try to modify it without going to the legislature to ask them to shorten the time, or say, if 6 months from any grant of temporary custody has been given, if the sole purpose is, one, to protect the child, and two, see...
Well, that's what Coffey says, right? Any grant of temporary custody.
No. Henry Coffey addresses the question of whether or not there must be temporary custody at the time the motion for permanent is filed. They answered that yes. I would only indicate that Coffey is different from the present case. For in Coffey, they found the temporary custody had never been terminated. And that's why I make reference to Appendix G in this case that specifically finds temporary custody was in fact terminated. In the event then that the court considers the requirements attempting to reunify this relationship with mother and child and requires that 6 months be mandated, and it is essential for the state to comply with the statute. One final point, and I specify this because of the facts of this particular case. When the agency filed its motion on December 2nd, 1994, it asked for the grant of permanent custody, but it also asked as an alternative for temporary custody. I would indicate that it did that pursuant to Section 2151.413. 2151.414. And I would suggest that, as Henry Miller suggests, that the court could have given a pass that granted them temporary custody, which would have started the clock running. But rather, what it did was it granted permanent custody, which I believe, of which we maintain, now in conformity with the statute.
Counsel, let me this slightly different way. The 6 months and the precise reading of the statute that you advocate is there for a very real purpose, and that is to give the natural parent a fair shot at turning things around. We seem to see more than one or two of these cases in which somebody made a mistake. There are lots of cases to keep track of. You have to start the clock over to comply with the statute. Shouldn't we afford some deference when because somebody goofed, and to comply with the strict reading of the statute, you have to start the clock over, that the court could look at the situation of the parents and perhaps treat somewhat differently that whole reunification effort, where the facts would indicate that the parent has not done anything positive and appears to be doing a lot of things that aren't positive still.
allow the court the discretion to do that and not follow the statute.
Well, you're asking us to follow the statute and say you have to start the clock on. In the inherent powers that a juvenile and probation court has, and then looking out for the best interest of the children, should we allow some wiggle room in terms of, and isn't that maybe the best answer? Their reunification plan and all of that looks a little differently when they've been working with this family for a year, year and a half, and this child has sort of gotten lost in the limbo. But to say the parents are drug addicts, just not fit and haven't done anything about that.
I think that the wiggle room that you refer to, the court should be allowed, is already present when it's given the authority to essentially determine where the child is going to be for the next 6 months. In this particular case, the child was placed in foster care. The mother was limited to supervised visits 1 hour at a time, supervised by the Department of Human Services. The question that is raised then, what opportunity does she have to either further injure the child, or the alternative, what attempts can she make to place the family in back together? And the ultimate question, what attempts can the agency make to put back together? But I guess to ultimately answer your question, should we give the court that wiggle room? I think that's what the legislature said by mandating it 6 months. If the legislature felt that it was essential or necessary to give them a more wiggle room, they may have ordered that it be 3 months of temporary custody or 60 days of temporary custody or 2 weeks. I would submit to you in this case it was only 3 days.
Thank you, Mr. Pilkins. Mr. Stern, you've saved almost 30 seconds of your time.
Mr. Stern, if you have your brief with you, would you bring it with you, please? I don't want to make a big point of it, but when you argue time limits in these cases, and you're reading one of these things late at night, would you look at page one of your brief? In the third full paragraph. See a mistake in about the third sentence? You're trying to figure out the timing, 6 months, a year. 94, not 95. So what you do, you read through 5 or 6 pages, and you think, what did I miss?
That would clearly be an error, which you certainly should use before.
Okay.
The only thing two things I want to try to address. When the appellee said, yes, adopt copy, we are now in complete agreement. What I want this court to do, however, is read the next line of copy, which the appellee doesn't direct you to. The appellee says, do you have to have temporary custody under copy? The court does answer that copy, yes. The next line of that opinion goes on to say, but returning the child under protective supervision does not extinguish that grant for purposes of 413. The only possible interpretation of that makes sense is that that grant is a point in time to start the clock for. Because as we discussed before, protective supervision and temporary custody are by definition different. All we're asking this court to do is provide that wiggle room so that the juvenile court is not surprised with his parent forward to protect them.
Thank you, Mr. Stern. The case is submitted. You'll be advised of our opinion.